Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel this morning. And, you know, after a week off, we're just getting, I'm getting used to what it's like to be on the radio.
Yeah.
So,
where'd you go?
I went to Montana and Alberta, Canada.
Wow.
I started in Glacier National Park and went up.
That is impressive.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Okay, I'll move on.
Okay.
Let us introduce everyone who is here and even those who are not here. And then we'll get to the subject at hand. Although I do want to remind you before we get started that on September 23rd, which is a week from today, we will be in the fun drive for those of you who are keeping track. And if you are not, you should be. So at 5:45 on Monday morning, the fun drive will begin. And it's September 23rd, and it's here, and it's going to go, and everything is going to be great, but this could make it better if you hit the lockbox. Now, the lockbox is a device which has been put into place to try to take days away from the fun drive, if not take away the entire fun drive.
Sure.
So whatever you put in now, then that comes off the total when we start, and, you know, we're off to the races.
You know, Joe, we have some wonderful members who get annoyed when they find somebody at a cocktail party or some other place who say, you know, why do they take so much time for the fun drive? And they say, are you a member? And now they report this to me. And they say, well, I listen a lot, but not that much. Well, you know, I think, look, it's like hearing from somebody that I avoid my taxes. Well, other people pay. Now, this isn't a tax situation. This is entirely voluntary. But the fact of the matter is we have created a wonderful organization here. Everybody always talks to me. Everywhere I go, people are saying how wonderful WAMC is. Somebody stopped me in a parking lot just yesterday and said, you know, we moved up from New York City, and we thought we were really going to be out where we're completely out of touch. We turned the radio on, and there was WAMC, and it's better than New York Public Radio. And we are so grateful that it's here. So there you are, folks. If your mothers and fathers had their way with you, what would they want? Would they want you to put something in? I mean, when somebody says to me, I can't afford it, and I say, a dollar? $5, $10, whatever you can do. And they say, well, I guess so. Come on now, folks. We can't have this if everybody doesn't do something. And all you got to do now is go to WAMC.org. That's all you have to do. Click on the lockbox, and right at the top of the page there, Ray, there's something that says, what, pledge now.
And there's also, if you go down a little bit, you'll actually see the mythical lockbox.
What do you mean mythical?
Well, I mean, it's a virtual lockbox, right?
Yeah.
It's not really a lockbox.
No, it is really.
Well, we don't, I mean.
No, anybody. Metaphor. Anybody screws around.
Well, we can't touch it, but I'm saying it's not an actual box.
I had to censure that word. With a lockbox. I mean, the one thing everybody knows here is that integrity counts.
Right.
And the integrity is, if you put it in, it's going to get deducted from the first day of the fund drive.
Right. That's not a physical box. That's all.
Well,
I meant.
It's almost a physical box.
You know, there's not a box like a treasure chest, an old pirate treasure chest.
Actually, it's in my office.
Is it really?
Oh yeah.
Now you see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I am so happy to be back. It's so good to be back. All right. So WAMC.org. And don't forget, if you want to volunteer, you can talk to Felicia Burke at extension 189 and volunteer. And to sign up, it's 1-800-323-9262, which is a number that you'll know in your sleep as we do next week. But here you go. You can volunteer, and we'd love to have you. You can also find out information by going to the website. So I know you'll be with us, and we thank you very much for everything, and we'll be ready for next Monday.
Okay, it isn't really in my office.
Ah!
I don't know where I left it. It's with the black book. welcome. Let me introduce our panel this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Newsman Ray Graff is here. And University at Albany journalism professor, as we say in the States, and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us. You know, Rosemary said you were going to be a little late, but you were like right on time. It was perfect. Perfect timing.
Actually,
that's
early.
Fine. I can wait until news to go to the bathroom. That'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that is why we have the news break after all. Let us get to the topics at hand. A lot going on. And I was thinking this morning that we would initially start. I don't know how you did it last week, Ray. I know.
Did I do it last week?
The last 2 weeks. What?
It's all a blur.
Yeah, it is.
The last 2 weeks, pretty much every story we started with was on Syria.
Yep.
And I was thinking, well, today we could start with Larry Summers, and then as I look at this, I'm thinking, let's start with Syria once again. And this is the deal that has been forged. President Obama's congressional critics expressed guarded optimism on the Sunday talk shows about an agreement reached with Russia over the weekend to seize and destroy Syria's chemical weapons, even as the president hailed the diplomatic effort as a foundation that could lead to a political settlement in that country's civil war. Mr. Obama said in an interview that was broadcast on Sunday on ABC that the United States was in a better position to prevent the president of Syria from using poison gas again because of the deal produced by Secretary of State John Kerry, as well as the Russian foreign minister. So we have watched this deal unfold. There seems to be a handshake now on the line. So where do we go from here?
Who are you looking at?
Anyone who wants to talk.
Okay, well, somebody sent a letter this week and said, will you please stop talking about Syria so much?
Oh, my gosh.
They'll all take care of that themselves. And I'm going to not listen to the radio anymore. So, you know, I'm glad you chose Syria first.
It's a big problem with the news that we have to go with the big, huge, important stories. And people just get tired of it. They did with 9/11, if you remember. Sure. Stop showing this. What else would you like to hear about?
Well, you're right. Look, here's what I have a couple of questions. People can be cynical about this. They can say, well, how do we know Assad will keep his word? We do know that the Russians have a foothold in Syria, big foothold. They have 55,000 people, I read somewhere, in Syria itself. They don't want to lose that. It's really one of the major places that they still have some influence in the Middle East. So when Putin makes a deal, I have a feeling that he has to, in order to maintain whatever credibility he's got to stay with that. And that Assad, it's perfectly possible that the way he got Assad to go along is he said to him, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to lose everything. You will not have a government. There will be nothing. Or maybe what we all worry about is you can keep some of the stuff, you know, on the side. So it's a question of verify. And since we really don't know how all of this came about, we don't know. It was Rosemary, you spent so much time abroad, and you have a sense that, you know, we have CIA operatives everywhere. Right. We have, you know, we have people in the agency and the rest and NSA. And so we don't know. We really don't know what the integrity is. But I suspect since they're covering their bets, since Obama is covering his bets and Kerry is covering his bets and saying, you know, we insist that they keep their word and everything, is there some suspicion on our part that they won't?
The president, I'm sorry, real quick, but the president said yesterday to, in an interview, actually it was taped on Friday, but it aired yesterday, on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, look, we're not there yet. We are not there yet. We have, we don't have an actual verifiable deal yet, and that will begin this process, but he does praise all parties involved for the distance that has been traveled over the last week and a half. And but I think, you know, Alan started off with this, Rosemary, that, look, there's still a lot of questions to be answered.
Yeah, but I just want one last thing here, and that is that there are a couple of other shadows. One of them is Iran. Because, you know, we're negotiating with Iran to get rid of its nuclear program. Mm-hmm. And we have said, and the president is now saying, that nuclear program is a line in the sand. Does that sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
And number two, where are the Republicans who were supporting the president and trying to push him into hitting Syria? Where are they? Mm-hmm. Well, they're getting out of town. They don't want anything to do with this because the last thing they want to do is not see us using our weapons and the rest of that stuff. And come, I think my own view of this is that Obama comes out of this looking very good.
Yeah, Bob Corker of Tennessee, a senator who is no friend of the president, said it's hard for anybody to poo-poo the idea that we may be on the way to a diplomatic solution. And that's the bottom line after all that's gone on. We've done a lot of talk here as well. It's gone on across the nation on the president's, what he called in his interview, style points, how he got to this point, and whether it was clunky, whether he looked uncomfortable in the role of a commandant, commander in general. And the truth is, I don't think any of that matters. I've said that before. The alternative to this agreement that's not firm and could fall apart is war, and that's not a good choice. So if we have a chance at this, however he got to it, was it a slip of the tongue that Kerry made, or was it adept diplomacy?
Sure.
Was it he made a mistake and then fixed it? Why does that matter? Why? The president himself, I think, said it best, because George Bush looked very firm, comfortable in his role as commander, was decisive, was macho, was everything we look for in a forceful leader, and we got embroiled in a horrible policy in Iraq. So if he ends up looking a little clunky and kind of like picking up the pieces afterward, and we end up with a solution here that involves no more American dollars or bodies, I'm happy with it.
But Rosemary, don't you think when he says that there's something really disarming about it, that he could be us? In other words, he's thinking on his feet. And that's what a good person does. And he's telling us what he's thinking.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Isn't that what we sort of vote for? We want someone who's not a Washington insider who has to do it the old ways. Isn't that what we voted for? Somebody who would do it differently?
It's what we say we want. But then when we get it, we don't know what to make of the lack of slickness. And we say if there's a hem or a haw. So the president was on 60 Minutes last night in an interview that was taped midweek, which seemed a bit out of date to me. But I was impressed by the president saying, look, you know, I have this issue in my house. I have and we're talking about it, and we don't want war. And we're trying to do everything. I keep saying to people, I don't want this to happen. I just don't know what else to do.
And it extends, Joe, not just to the president doing that, but John Kerry. He was asked in an interview, okay, is there any way we could avoid this? He gave what to me seemed like a very honest answer. It was no slip of the tongue. It was an honest answer. Well, yeah, if we could get all the chemical weapons out there, that would end things. And then things took off from there, and both the president and John Kerry jumped on it. Why? Tell me again, anybody, any of these Republicans who are still knocking Obama, or here we've knocked him, why is that bad?
Well, the military industrialists, we know why it's bad for them. You know, you can't spend money. Those missiles cost, each missile, I think we read $1.25 million. That's a lot of money.
It's money that could go to Colorado, where we need flood relief now. I know we're going to talk about that later.
You bet, or to colleges, or to to healthcare. So we know where they are now. John McCain is really jumping through hoops in order to get us to do, you know, to do the war thing, and that is not a nice thing for me to be watching. Because, you know, American men and women are going to go and get killed if we put boots on the ground. And as sure as we're here, once you start flying missiles around, you're going to end up, as we did in Iraq, with boots on the ground. Did you want to say something?
Your phone is charging.
I'm so sorry.
Starting some
feeling like an interrogation.
Why don't I turn it off? But I've been told you only hear that in your earphones.
Yes, it's true. It doesn't go over the air.
You don't hear it on the air. It's
true.
A sort of buzzing sound.
Yeah, it's very
but
true.
I turned it off, and now we'll rely on Joe to read the mail when it comes in.
Yes. We haven't got any yet. But you can at WAMC.org. Just go to the website or roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll take your mail then. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll continue our conversation about Syria and other items in the world after this short break.
Support comes from Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region, offering comprehensive medical and surgical eye care. Ophthalmicconsultants.com. UMass Amherst Museum of Contemporary Art presents the exhibition Du Bois in Our Time. 10 artists explore the legacy of W.E.B. Du Bois 50 years after his death. umass.edu/umca. Dimar Shen, Hudson, New York. Clothing and accessories for men and women from U.S., European, and local designers, now featuring fall fashions. Dimar Shen, Hudson, on Facebook. And Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We talked a little bit about some of the flack that the president has been getting, and I just wanted to touch on the interview that he gave with George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week that aired on Sunday. President Obama has responded to critics who disagree with his handling of the situation in Syria, saying he's more concerned about the end goal, no chemical weapons in Syria, than about style points, as Rosemary pointed out earlier. As for the public perception of his own management of the U.S. response to the alleged use of chemical weapons by the Syrian regime, Obama said, "Folks here in Washington like to grade on style. And so had we rolled out something that was very smooth and disciplined and linear, they would have graded it well, even if it was a disastrous policy." And George Stephanopoulos asked whether the recent events changed his view on former President George Bush. And he said, "No, what it says is that I'm less concerned about style points. I'm much more concerned about getting the policy right." When will we know that the policy is right, do you think?
Wow, that's a good question, because all the Republican opponents are saying, "Oh, this is a policy fraught with danger," which I don't understand, because how is it more fraught with danger than a policy of shooting missiles into Syria? And the other thing that you seem to object to is that while it seems to be going well at this point, as well as can be expected, it's Putin who led it, they think, rather than our president. So this is bad. Obama himself has said, "I welcome Putin's involvement." Rogers, he's the Republican from Michigan, I believe.
Yeah.
Mike Rogers. He's concerned that Putin will get everything he wants, his warm water port in Syria, military contacts, gives breathing space to both Hezbollah and to Assad. But I think all of those things were still true, even if we were shooting missiles into him. I don't see that diplomacy that could solve this without war changes any of that.
Well, all the years I've been here, I've always said one thing: it's not what you know, it's what you don't know.
Yeah.
And we don't know. I mean, we don't know. We didn't know in the Cuban Missile Crisis that we were going to take the Turkish missiles
right.
out. We didn't know that. We were told that years later. And we don't really know what kind of diplomacy went on in order to give Putin. But look what Putin gets. He gets a great deal, as you just said.
Yeah,
he keeps Assad in power. That's huge.
One of our callers last week said, "How do you know they're not talking?" Because we said, "Why aren't they talking?" And you said, "How do you know the president is involved or Kerry isn't involved?" And actually, it looks like he is.
Oh, sure.
He spoke yesterday also about exchanging letters with the new president of Iran. So it looks like it's a regional effort to actually do diplomacy. I hope that's true. It looks it's borne fruit so far.
We're going to take a break and catch up on the news, and Rosemary has some other stuff to take care of. And we'll be back in just a few moments and talk about Larry Summers and the Fed and many other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable, WAMC.org, right after this. Welcome back to our WAMC panel discussion this morning. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Another big story over the weekend was, had you looked at the newspaper on Sunday morning, there were articles about how many Democrats were cautious or saying that they would not support Larry Summers for Fed chief. And then by the end of the day, Larry Summers pulled his name from consideration. And it was, I guess, not overly surprising as the support started to crumble and crumble pretty quickly. But for Warren Summers, President Obama's preferred candidate to lead the Federal Reserve, perhaps the debate over Syria was the final sign.
I'm not sure how Syria played into it, but this was welcome news to me because I like Janet Yellen. I don't understand why her candidacy made her a less than first choice.
Why do you like her?
She has a great record. She's an intellect. She knows what she's doing. She's got a good policy on dealing with banks, unlike Larry Summers. I don't understand why she was not the top candidate in the first place. There's also a certain bit of irony, which I enjoy, that Larry Summers, who got into trouble when he was president of Harvard, demeaning the ability of women in math and science, has been ousted in favor, I hope, of a woman. So certain feminist revenge there.
You know, there's something else here, and that is, what happened after the meltdown, the economic meltdown? And was Summers the penultimate insider? In other words, having played on both the government team and also being very close to the banks and to the rest. And that is, of course, something that gave me a lot of pause. You know, I don't think that those either at HUD at the time or others who got us into the housing bubble, into the crisis, right, ever were brought to, you know, public scrutiny.
Right, to accountability.
And accountability. Mm-hmm. And I think my impression, whether this is entirely right or not, is that Larry Summers was such a person, was close to the insiders.
Wasn't all of Obama's guys as well.
They were. And, you know, as I've said before, sometimes when we like the guy, Obama, we tend not to look too carefully at some of the inside team. Now, did the United States end up doing fairly well compared to other countries? Yeah, the answer is yes. Probably. We're probably back on our feet now. But because we wanted to get where we were going, did we, you know, sort of obfuscate on who the players who were responsible were? I was uncomfortable with this, with the Summers thing.
Obama did what, you know, smart people do. You have a problem that you're not yourself an expert in this case, a global economic meltdown.
Sure.
So he calls in the people with the biggest minds. Those tended to be, and were in this case, insiders. And the result was mixed, as you say. Probably good results for our economy. The global meltdown didn't last longer than it did, but there was no accountability, very little accountability. There's nobody who's been, not just sent to jail, but brought into court to explain what happened. And Larry Summers and Geismar were both among the people doing that. Don't punish Wall Street. Remember all the don't complain about bonuses on Wall Street. Think about the big picture. And that's hard to do. But there's more than that here. I mean, the two of the prominent Democrats who came out against Summers were Sherrod Brown and and Elizabeth Warren, and they are upset with his easiness, his looseness with big banks, and that plays a huge role in the job of the Fed chief. So there are other reasons here, not just we didn't like his role in the economic meltdown.
But in the end, he goes down because basically he wasn't a likable character.
Very unlikable, yeah. Very unlikable.
You know, I mean, I don't... Yeah. Exactly. You can't... This is not a warm and fuzzy guy.
No.
Yeah. And in any time I have seen him... And you think of how much time the Federal Reserve Chairman goes up. I mean, I don't know I don't know if you would call Alan Greenspan cuddly. But, you know, you go up and you you watch him on Capitol Hill testify before...
The committees, right? Exactly.
And then you think, oh, all right, you know, seems to know what he's doing. Same with Bernanke. But there is an arrogance here that I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that matters. But
it matters because this is a guy who Joe can get up before those microphones. And based on the nuances of what they're saying, the markets go up or down. You know, you got to have somebody you have confidence in.
Right.
One other interesting thing about this whole Larry Summers affair, and that's this is the second time now in a short period of time where Obama's first choice for a post has been knocked down before he even officially nominated them. And I find that an interesting power play, the whole idea of confirming people.
Makes it easier, right?
I guess. I don't know. The whole idea of confirmation hearings has gotten very naughty. And now we just bypass them altogether. We just have them withdraw from consideration.
So I want to just pick up before we move on to another topic when you mentioned feminist revenge, Rosemary. Janet Yellen, who is the current vice chairwoman as a finalist for this job, as the New York Times points out in their article this morning, it remains unclear how seriously Mr. Obama is considering her.
Yeah, you know, feminist groups and journalism groups have been looking at the coverage of the candidates long before this weekend when Summers finally backed out, and Yellen has consistently been downplayed, not just by the White House apparently, but by the press. And I did a lot of reading to try to figure out this weekend why that was, what her weakness was, and the main thing appears to be that they're not sure how she'll do in the number one position as compared to the number two position. She's right under Bernanke right now. That seems to me really weak.
Well, I think what they also show, at least this article in the Times points out, is some of the president's advisors argue that the Fed needs an outsider to shake up its thinking. And interestingly, some officials within the administration have expressed irritation for some time at, this is from the New York, quoting from the New York Times, at what they see as a campaign by Ms. Yellen, or at least on her behalf, that unfairly maligned Mr. Summers. So politics rears its ugly head.
Yeah.
Clearly, Summers, President Obama's first choice, and they think, well, her crew was digging at Summers. We don't like her.
Yeah, and as if it wasn't true the other way around.
Exactly.
Whether the supporters of...
Yeah, but the president wanted Summers.
Yeah.
And so there is some irritation there. So it makes sense that they would not go, you know, running, screaming, waving the flag, saying, oh, yeah, yelling all the way.
Well, in politics, there's always some irritation, as you say.
She campaigned for the job.
Yelling.
Wow, that's an offense. I
always
really want to.
You couldn't resist, could you?
Hey, you know what? I'm just reading it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
As we all are.
When I was in junior high school. Perhaps you don't want to hear this.
This is the
John Bark would walk around the corner. We got a Yellen's Delicatessen.
Oh.
And you get two big fat frankfurters, sauerkraut, mustard, French fried potatoes. And a Pepsi Cola for how much?
Don't know.
A dollar.
A dollar. I was gonna say 50 cents, but
Yellen's Delicatessen.
Yellen's Delicatessen. Was it like yellow mustard or that deli mustard?
Deli.
Do you really think that the appointment of the Fed chief is the second most important job of the president after the appointment of Supreme Court justices? That some of the coverage framed the decision in those terms this weekend.
Well, it comes
seems
to the economy.
Pretty important, right?
Yeah. You make if he breathes through the left nostril as opposed to the right nostril, the economy takes terrible consequences. The markets go this way or that way. I think he's very important when you talk about the lives of Americans.
Or she.
Or she. Aha, she pounced. I knew it. I knew it.
He or she
you
is
know
very
something?
Important.
You're absolutely right. I want to apologize to all of you.
Well played, Rosemary.
And especially to you, Rosemary.
And while the apologies abound, we'll take a break, and we'll be back and talk about what's going on in Colorado and other stories. We welcome your comments roundtable at WAMC.org right here on WAMC.
Support comes from Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring crocus, daffodils, tulips, allium, and more for fall planting. Ward'sNursery.com. The Research Foundation for SUNY, collaborating across the state to expand New York's innovation ecosystem. RFSUNY.org. And Haldora Rhinebeck, women's clothing designed by Haldora for upstate lifestyles, special occasions, or travel. Also featuring cashmere sweaters, jeans, jewelry, and undergarments. 845-876-6250.
I want to move on to other topics on our panel this morning, but first we will look at...
There's a little advertising going on here we didn't like.
Yeah, it's all gone now, boss.
Yeah.
I got that for you, boss.
Flyers and flyers in the room.
Everything all right now?
Fine.
Well...
Fine. All right. We got this letter from Pamela who says, "Hello all. I had a pull over and make a comment about President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry. I watched some political talk shows yesterday, and I think that they are most afraid of how Russia is getting positive press right now and that they think the U.S. looks weak. I think the President and Secretary of State Kerry are doing a stunning job. They're staring, I believe, is what they meant to say, staring at the open door to possibly starting another war. They're trying to do the right thing for the people of Syria. I agree with the administration's current plan to try everything, even if they are called weak."
So that's another good letter.
A good letter.
We move on and talk about the story coming out of Colorado, which for reasons that we may or may not get into today, I'm sure we probably will, as to, you know, why this happens and why we are talking about this certainly more frequently than we used to. And that is a deadly Colorado flood. This is just a horrible... The pictures are horrible. The story is horrible.
1,000 people still not accounted for.
Yeah, 500 people who remain unaccounted for. Authorities fear as many as 6 may be dead. Heavy clouds and rain have grounded helicopters this morning, slowing the search for those who are missing. 1,000 people are waiting to be evacuated. It's quite a story. This is in Boulder, Colorado, that is located almost squarely between the Rocky Mountain National Park and Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it is it's one of those stories of, and you alluded to this earlier, Rosemary, of, you know, when do we... So that now, when do we start saying, okay, let's do everything that we can to clean up the situation, right, and make things better?
I would make a point. I went to New York this past weekend with some visiting journalists from Tunisia, and we went to the Al Jazeera, Al Jazeera America newsroom. It's amazing how much money and effort's going into that. And in this massive newsroom is a whole section for weather. It's right in the main newsroom now. And the reason for that is how often weather is the biggest story in America these days. That's frightening, number one. And number two is we've seen some balking by Republicans about funding relief. It used to be almost automatic under the last 2 or 3 administrations that areas hard hit by weather would get federal help. And now it's part of the whole budget problem. How do we pay for it, or do we pay for it, like Hurricane Sandy here? Well, and I hope that won't happen in Colorado.
Well, you know, when you get Chris Christie out there in New Jersey, they had the fire. We know what he did in Sandy. His numbers went up because he was there every moment. And now the fire in the boardwalk, he's there. Woe be the political leader who says we can afford, you know, missiles, but we can't afford to help people when they get into this terrible...
I mean, there's probably some massive readjustment going on in federal budgeting that this used to be like a rainy day, literally a rainy day fund. And now those rainy days are so frequent that it has to be a part of... Federal relief for disasters has to be part of our budget.
And The Midwest, of course, or West, is no stranger to flash floods, but to this type of flood and to this type of to have this kind of incredible impact on such a large area from Fort Collins, Colorado,
right,
which is almost, I think, an hour and a half north, to Boulder and below, is really stunning. And as you say, it becomes all too frequent. Mm-hmm. And I just came back from Calgary, and they went through this in June, mm-hmm. and are still recovering from massive flooding.
Sure. To say nothing of the fires. To say nothing of, you know,
right,
yeah, killer fires, right, and tornadoes and. Oof.
We want to, we'll break here for some breaking news. Break for breaking news? Yeah, you can do that,
sure,
right? That William Thompson will withdraw to concede to Bill de Blasio in the mayoral primary. That is the story that broke about 2 minutes ago. He's ending his second bid to run the city, according to... authorities on both campaigns. Mr. Thompson, a Democrat, will endorse his rival Bill de Blasio after making the announcement. De Blasio is leading in votes counted thus far from last week's mayoral primary with a little more than 40% of the vote. Thousands of ballots remain uncounted, with many of them to be tallied today. But Mr. Thompson realized, those close to him said, that even if he were to qualify for a runoff against Mr. De Blasio, that his chances of victory were slim. So is that a good way to play it? I assume.
No, it's a good way to play it. There will be a runoff, of course, in New York for a public advocate position that de Blasio came from, but nobody knows from. I mean, it's really not an important thing. I wonder what the turnout on is going to be for the runoff for public advocate in New York City. Maybe 4%? I don't know.
You never know. Mr. Thompson has scheduled a press conference at 11 o'clock at City Hall to make the announcement official. So that just came in. And
what does he get?
Who, Thompson?
What does he get for
he gets a player to be named later.
What job does he get? He obviously made a deal, yes?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was sort of inevitable that he was going to lose. There was 99% counted this morning. And de Blasio still was holding at 40.3%. So, but the other thing that appeared in one of the tabloids, one which I don't trust a lot, this morning, said that there was now bad blood between Cuomo and de Blasio, because Cuomo sees himself as a fiscal moderate, and de Blasio is a guy who ran as a liberal. Wants more money for the schools and more money for the hospitals.
And come from wealthier people, too.
That's right, and to tax the rich.
Right.
And so that puts them at some odds. And everybody's scurrying around, particularly on the Cuomo side, trying to say nothing of the sort. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know what it means.
So it's always interesting to have powerful people at loggerheads with each other. It makes for better governance.
Sometimes you see terrible things happening as a result of that. When the animus is irrational. So that, for example, when Andrew Cuomo goes after our controller and makes the point that Tom DiNapoli, and you know, for no what seems like not substantial reasons, and now we're talking about just personal animus. I think
this does not appear to be that. I agree that there's no room for in politics for that at all.
Well, it's not. There may not be room, but they do it all the time.
I was sorry last week that I missed the whole discussion in this forum regarding Spitzer and Wiener.
Yeah. Well,
I think it was tasteful.
What was tasteful?
Our discussion was tasteful. We did not go over any red lines or
no.
Rosemary may have said some bad words, but I mean, other than that, it was a good week.
Well, my personal opinion, never speaking for the station, of course, but my personal opinion was it was a bad thing because I thought that I thought that Spitzer, had he won, would have mixed things up. And that's, as Rosemary, I think, just implied, always a good thing.
Yeah.
And he would have gone after some of the people who were in power.
Unfortunately, getting him back into power requires a vote for him, and some of us just can't do that.
I hear you.
Let's get to the final issue this morning. I don't even know. If call
speaking
it an
for
issue.
A test of our ability to be tasteful, here comes the story.
Here we go. Now go. You know, this is one of those stories that you probably, people will write and say, you have no right talking about this. This shouldn't be a story. But the fact that it is a story is why I think it's interesting to talk about.
Sure.
And that is, we had a Miss American contestant. Miss Kansas, who did not win, we should note. The Miss America pageant, for those of you keeping track
of New York
at home,
won, right? Miss New York won.
Miss New York won, I believe, yes.
Yeah.
And
up Syracuse way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Miss Kansas, Teresa Vail, was the first.
Thank you for using her name.
Was the first beauty queen to prominently, in italics, prominently sport a large tattoo during a pageant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I personally was surprised that there wasn't a rule against tattoos. Like, you have to have no marking on your bodies, no ear piercings.
No
tattoos. Hymen has to be intact. Ridiculous, asinine contest. I can't believe we still have to be discussing beauty pageants in 2013.
But isn't the fact that this has gone, I mean, this used to be a big deal. This used to be something that would take
what,
over.
Tattoos or the pageant?
The pageant. Okay. The pageant used to be on a major network. It used to, I mean, Burr Parks, the whole thing.
It isn't anymore?
No. It's on a third, okay, excuse me. It's on a cable
network.
Lesser
network. Known, lesser viewed channel. That's what you meant
cable
to say.
Cable network, right?
Which one, Al Jazeera?
It doesn't have.
I don't think so.
It doesn't have.
The Amir wouldn't like that.
That's funny.
Well, they would like it.
This
they
took
just
a turn. Stop. Okay, so.
Well, look at the time.
The question being, you know, I mean, that I think that shows just that we've kind of lost interest, isn't it? I mean, it used to be, I think, reality.
Tattoos are in, beauty pageants are out. That's the bottom line.
Well,
this
Ms.
is a remarkable young woman. She was in the Army. She's a sharpshooter. She shoots bows and arrows. She's got abs to kill for. She doesn't even need a tattoo to draw attention to her amazing body.
But it worked.
And and that's the story. I mean,
I'm surprised you're even speaking about amazing bodies. That's all passé now, Rosemary.
Oh, no, we still like bodies. We just aren't supposed to, like, only look at women. We can look at men now, too. In our post.
Anyway, it was
stage.
The Serenity Prayer. It was
tasteful.
Was
Serenity
it was
Prayer
nice,
on the one
you know?
Side, and what the other side was.
How many of you have tattoos?
A military medical insignia.
No,
I do not.
I'm against them.
Personally speaking, and always personally, I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
My wife keeps telling me that on her 70th birthday, she's getting one.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I mean, this is millennials, they say, CNN, in researching this story, found that 40% of the younger generation, the millennials, are inked. I've been to spas filled with middle-aged women, and most of us have them, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Where?
On my shoulder.
Okay.
I've blogged about
it. Is it the Serenity Prayer?
It is not. I don't like words on the body. I think you should have pictures.
Like a flower?
Why would we deface our
bodies? Skull and crossbones.
Why would we deface our bodies? I don't get that.
Oh, look at the time.
It's not defacing.
Yeah. Well,
we got to go.
It's ornamentation.
But that's also your body.
Right.
You mean anybody should be able to do what they want?
Yes. And that's the bottom line.
You
don't like it. I don't like it. It doesn't matter. If Joe likes it, if Rosemary wants to get tats. Hey, go to
the I don't town. Want us judging women in bathing suits, no matter what's on their body or not on it.
And with that, we thank you very much. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We welcome your comments as always. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.